Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Storm.
Cloaked in secrecy, they show up without warning. State their business, then vanish as quickly as they appear.
Are you ready for the sex girls?
Not that I believe in it, but I could see that. But these guys are dumb.
Freaking nerds.
The Boogie Monster. Podcasting the unknown.
There we go. Okay, we're wrong. God damn it. Jesus Christ.
That's how you start. When you're on round three.
If this were any other task in my house and Katie was around, why, heaven forbid, I just try to get something done. I must say that once a day from down the hall. Heaven forbid I get, anytime I try, I don't know what's going on the last couple of weeks, but anytime I try even the most menial of tasks, something goes awry. I mean, what we were just talking about before I screwed this up, even the cheese rind. My God.
Which now we're referencing things that we think people heard, but it's because we've talked about this for 3 times already.
Exactly. Yeah, this is take 3 on this week's podcast of the Boogie Monster. So fingers crossed. We're 53 seconds in and things are looking good on my end. So let's just ride that wave.
All right. It might be a truncated episode. We'll see.
We're going to patchwork this shit together one way or the other.
To recap. Dave made a nice meal. We tried to record in person. A breaker went off. Lost that recording. We just tried to record again. Some goofy. Dave's house is haunted. Now, given that this spoons are missing because of ghosts. Now I believe you. Yeah, you live in a haunted apartment.
Something's going on. Hey, Kyle. Why don't you tell me how great that meal was for a third time?
I would you know what? It was good enough. I'll whisper it in your ear. What you need from me about it. It was a phenomenal meal. We're going to rush through the recap. Olive tapenade to start. I did put pictures up on the Boogie Monster Instagram. Or, no, on my Instagram, but I'll put them up. I should have put them up on the Boogie Monster Instagram, which I will do.
Huh. Yeah, we'll wait till the episode comes out, and that'll all work.
Don't jinx it. This one may never come out. We might just be talking to each other again. Like a couple of fucking Alzheimer's patients having the same conversation.
Yeah, we were so bummed that the breaker went off and canceled our recording the first time, and then you made a good point. Like, oh, well, I guess it's okay for friends to just hang out and have a conversation.
Yeah. But we did.
Why would we do that?
We just did that again.
Oh man, the first one we were about 40 minutes deep when it crapped out, but fortunately the second one was only about 12. So
yeah. Well, let's get this one out because I got a hot date at the DMV later. So.
Oh really? That's always fun.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Exciting stuff in my life. What is Kyle's slutty summer?
Now you mentioned that off the air. This sounds very exciting.
I don't know what it means.
it sounds good.
It's good branding. For whatever I was going to do this summer anyway. That's what it is.
You're out there. You're back on the market. You're gonna.
I don't know. I'm just gonna. Your boy's got summer off. He's gonna put on his short shorts and ride his little bicycle around town. See what happens.
You got some shorts. Do you have bicycle shorts?
Oh, I mean, I got the full rig.
Yeah.
So I said, it was funny. I did that show with Chris Fleming last Friday in L.A., which was great. I was nervous. I was just going to be like the old road hack with deservedly everybody's darling right now, Chris Fleming.
That is kind of some of the water cooler talk around the comedy offices. What a road hack Kyle Kinane is.
When you go back to LA and you do the cool rooms and then I'm just yelling about dicks and jizz. I'm like, oh, well, But he did a joke where he's like, he's making fun of cyclists and then making fun of vegans. I'm like, how am I the target of the at the person with multiple pantsuit outfit changes throughout his set? And I'm like, I'm the one who's the subject of this. It was, we were having a laugh about it. It was a good time.
So wait, he has outfit costume changes during the same set?
He went up first, and then he brought out Lisa Gilroy, who's on the show, and then he had came up after her. He had an outfit change for that. And he just has somebody making wild clothes for him.
Good for him. He's so funny.
Yeah, I think I like what he's about. I like that he blew up, and I wish him nothing but the best.
So, good times, buddy.
Yeah.
You had a good set?
I did. I kind of came out swinging.
Good for you, man. How do you like that? Someone who probably, 95% of your shows are your own headlining shows? How do you? And I know you do a lot of spots, you know, around town, but as far as like a pretty good ticketed show that you're just doing a spot on, you like that? Is that a different change of pace for you?
Well, it's a whole different, I mean, they're there for him. And so I don't want to fall into the trap of, I don't know if it's a trap. It's kind of, that's what you work hard for, is to build your own audience. So you get to walk in, people already know who you are, they know your point of view. But I think it's a double-edged sword, because you can get too comfortable and too confident, and you could lose your edge. Not to go back to another Blade reference in that metaphor. But
you don't have to, you feel like you don't have to earn it up front.
Yeah, you see a lot of these guys that are established, and they're just kind of, they're hacking their own material, which I've been doing jokes. People are like, I like, it's like a callback to your other bit. I'm like, oh yeah, I said that. It's not a callback. I just said this already. You know, I got a quarter century of comedy. Like, oh yeah, I just said this idea already on stage. Whoops.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, I'm not going to sweat it. But you don't want to lose the skill set of being able to walk into a room and go, nope, I still got well-written jokes. I remember doing, it was Blind Barber. You remember that show?
Oh, yeah.
And like the hip, there was two of them. There was one on the east side and one in,
what do you call that? Santa Studio Mar- City?
No.
Culver City.
Culver City was the OG one, and then there was one on the east. And I was at the one on the east side. It's, you know, it's all the hip, like, who's the hip new comic? And then Tom Papa rolled in there and crushed, nice. Which of course he would. But it was one of those, like, it doesn't matter that this, just, he's just a married guy. He opens for Seinfeld. He knows what he's doing, and he's not bothered by the circumstances of the room. And I want to have that or retain that.
I've experienced that dozens of times where I just feel way too old for the room. Like, you know, especially here in LA, like you're talking about the east side, which for reference is kind of the hipster side of town. And a lot of the alt scene shows are over there. And, I mean, I still feel that way. Like, you get up in a coffee shop and you look around the room, you're like, oh, the oldest person in the crowd's 25 years old.
Yeah.
What do they want from my old ass?
Well,
but
I did Jonah Ray's show at Scribble on Tuesday. That's got meltdown vibes. That was, so yeah, if we'll just talk, we'll do a little comedy talk.
Sure.
Same thing. I'm like, oh, this is the hip show. And I was there, and it was Nori Reed, who I wasn't familiar with, but they did well. And then who was a guy named Max Beasley went up, and he was hilarious. Like, and I say this with complete adulation, real stupid one-liners, but paced well. I mean, the joke, like, I don't know, they say dogs aren't supposed to have chocolate, but from my experience, they love that shit. And I should know, I've had a lot of dogs. I'm like, oh, that's good. That's a perfect joke. That's a perfect joke. Yeah, that was, it was awesome. It was that, the whole set were bangers like that. And then Whitmer Thomas went up, who I've always thought was great. Like the whole Power Violence crew, for reference, these guys, they were like a little skate crew that would make sketches, and they had a late show on Sundays at one of those dumpy theaters off Santa Monica Boulevard, and it was chaos, and it was fun, and it was friends making stuff that they thought was funny, and it wasn't this There was no desperation. Like, is this liked by the – I mean, they moved to L.A., but there wasn't this – I hope an executive sees, like, no, this is just a little crew of punk rock skateboard kids that made goofy shit and just the vibe – it was just good vibes and it was a good hang.
And Whitmer's the only one of that crew, I think, that actually did stand up. The other three guys just – they did a lot of the sketch stuff. And they were long time buddies.
Yeah,
of his,
or they were in the band, or they did the videos. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said, he's like, they don't want to do stand up. I think he told me one time, like, they don't want to do stand up. They'll do the sketches. He's the only one that did the stand up. And so he went up, but he had a guitar and he sang some songs. And one was funny, but not corny. R.I.P. Who was the fella just passed away? Kind of had a run-in with the law and then was ill.
A comic?
No, musician. Folk.
Oh, Todd Snyder.
Yeah, it was a vaguely Todd Snyder type of tune.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were. But then the second one, I was like, I was going to cry. I was like, man, this is beautiful and sincere, and he's great. And then Fairbanks went up. I'm like, well, what the fuck? I got to follow Chris Fairbanks.
One of my favorites. Love Chris.
One of everybody's favorites, as he should be. And, yeah, and then I had to go up, and I was still, you know, yelling about dicks and jizz. But
yeah,
it was all right. It went well. But
well, good for you, man. It is funny how, like, you're sitting here talking about being nervous in some of these shows, like you're an amateur, like you're a rookie. It doesn't matter how you've been doing it a quarter century,
man,
and
there's no quality control. Like, if you don't listen to the audience or there's no quality control. There's nobody going. There's no performance review in comedy.
Someone told me early on, if you're not at least a little bit nervous, you're not taking it seriously.
I don't understand the headliners that don't watch the show before, not even once on a weekend, to see what people are talking about. What's the mood of the room? Like, I want to pay attention to that stuff.
If nothing else, so that you're not sharing topics. Like, what if your opener does a 10-minute closer on chocolate pudding and you don't know about it and you've got an opener about
there
chocolate pudding?
There goes my
it's
chocolate
those little
pudding
things
material.
You got, I mean, seriously, it sounds trivial, but like it's awkward when the crowd's like, oh, does he know the last guys talked 5 minutes about this?
Yeah, or just or to be able to comment, like, look, I was watching the show too. I was here. Mm-hmm. I'm in the room. I'm enjoying it as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so I guess then to catch up on that, yeah, it was a banger of a run. I started in Medford, Oregon 2 Wednesdays ago. Well, this is coming out Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We put it on Wednesday or Tuesday. When do we put them out?
Wednesday, Kyle. Every other Wednesday.
Because you put them out.
Yeah.
I forget. So Wednesday. So it'd been 2 weeks ago. I was in Medford, Oregon. Wasn't sure how the show was going to go. Wound up being great. Sold out. Real good time. Had my buddy Zach Toscani roll down there with me. And it
so
was
funny.
Yeah. Zach was great. And show was a lot of fun. Basement of an Elks Lodge. Been hitting these Elks Lodges a lot.
There you
unintentionally
go.
That was great. Then I was in Sacramento for the weekend. Sacramento, one of my favorite places to play. Like,
really, what do you like about it?
Just the crowds are great. They're a good time. They can handle me making fun of their city. I'm like, the people of Sacramento, some of the most amazing people I can perform for. The city of Sacramento, what a shithole. What an absolute dump. I don't know why you're here. I don't know if it's a court-ordered stay. That's the difference between Sacramento and Phoenix. I make fun of Sacramento. They get it. I make fun of Phoenix. People go, oh, you don't make fun of Phoenix. Phoenix fucking rules. No, it doesn't. I even told her, I'm like, so I'd say Sacramento feels like somebody dropped Phoenix on the floor, on the kitchen floor, and kicked it under the fridge instead of picking it up. And I've told Phoenix that Sacramento, Phoenix feels like a Sacramento combed its hair for a court date. And Sacramento laughs and Phoenix doesn't.
Yeah.
But I was almost going to do a special there. I just didn't come to fruition. But awesome weekend there. Added a Mother's Day show last minute in Bakersfield. Some people still showed up, so thank you. Thanks to them for showing up. And it was just a good run. Plopped me down in L.A., shored up some business, tied up some loose ends, you know, collected my materials from there. I have no more obligation to the city of Los Angeles.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is it a happy thing or a sad thing?
It's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's a moving on. But, you know, I had an apartment there when I was partnered up. And so I had a half of an apartment worth of stuff down there. And that's what I finally extracted on this run. And so.
Would you.
It was at my sister's. She was cool with leaving it. I just was like, oh, I'm taking up space in your garage.
You take everything out and bring it back to Portland?
I left a box. It was a box of clothes. I didn't. I'm like, I got so many. Dave, I got so many clothes. How do you?
Yeah.
Do you get rid of? I've just got T-shirts. I can't say no to a well-designed T-shirt.
Same. And my thing is, I've got a big blue Rubbermaid bin that is 15 years old, filled with 15 to 20 year old T-shirts. That I'm one day going to fit in. One day I'm going to be able to wear these. So I can't get rid of them because it's this weird little motivation. It's like I'm going to fit into an XL again one day.
Well, it's all sentimental. Oh, this band. Oh, this venue. It's like it's the venue. I mean, some of the venues aren't still there. Some of the bands aren't bands anymore. But, yeah, I got to get over some of that. I gotta get over that and just get rid of some. So it was easy to leave some of the stuff down there. Mm-hmm. So I got clothes all over the place up here. Got another bike. God damn it.
Is there any part of LA that you miss living here? Is there anything you had access to here that you don't have access there now? And you're like, oh, I miss that.
It's somebody else asked me about if I missed LA. I miss the time that I was there. Mm-hmm. Like when I go back now, that's how time works. But so when I was there and it still felt a little raw and.
Well, and you witnessed a big. I mean, it wasn't like overnight, but you witnessed a big personal change. What I mean is, like, when you moved to LA, you were an open micer, and when you left LA, you're a comedy guy.
Well, get the fuck out of here, that kind of shit. Gave me my career. I got my career because of being in LA, and so I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for seeing the early bits of the East Side. I mean, and anybody is going to have that. Every generation is going to look at the generations that's there now and go like, oh boy, I don't know how you guys do it. Cause when I was there, it was affordable. No, it was still expensive compared to 10 years before I got there and what neighborhoods have changed. Now I just don't know. You know, people are living all the way out in Pasadena. Like, oh, you don't live in LA anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know. I'm not there. I'm unplugged. I don't know if there's a hang. I don't know if there's a scene anymore. I don't know what people do. Everybody's 50 years old with kids, so I don't know what people do. And I don't know if they're hanging out. And if they are, I would feel like the old weirdo if I was trying to go, oh, what are the youth doing today? But I was there in my 20s and 30s, and it was awesome. And you know, I miss the excitement of doing shows at Meltdown Comics. I will say this, everything cool is a fucking condo now. Everything's a condo. Hey, we should put condos. Better have condos. Oh, cool. Are they affordable? No, not at all.
No,
but we're
not at all.
But we're building them. We won't stop building condos. It's like a fast spreading cancer, that's not exclusive to LA.
No.
But the neighborhoods, just driving down Sunset into Echo Park, it's just these monstrous condos, which, I mean, they were like ratty storefronts, and I could see why the buildings didn't survive.
Yeah.
But It's just it feels a little impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
Like the personality of the neighborhoods is condos.
Yeah. Yeah, they're everywhere.
Which somebody felt that when it was orange groves and houses started mm-hmm. going in. And then somebody felt yeah. that when the houses got torn down and slightly cooler looking apartment buildings went in. So mm-hmm. my version is that it's cheaply made condominiums.
Speaking of which, there's like a subgenre of YouTube video that I've been enjoying lately, and it's, I don't know what you would call it, but it's just old footage mm-hmm. of cities, but there's a lot of old LA from the point of view of a car. So like somebody in the 50s or 60s riding shotgun in a car with a camera, and there's several good ones of LA. And I love just seeing, like, there's one of my block from 1962.
Yeah.
And you know that strip club on the corner up near Sunset? It was there, and it was named the same. What's the that? Body Shop.
Oh, Body Shop.
If anybody knows, I won't give away my exact location, but I live near the Body Shop on the Sunset Strip. And, mm-hmm. you watch an old 60s video of L.A. I don't know what you would call those car videos, POV, whatever. But some of them are like 30 minutes long where someone, they just started filming, you know, down in Echo Park, and they take Sunset all the way to the ocean, you know, and just seeing what the town looked like back then. But, yeah. I love that kind of shit.
Oh,
and
yeah.
most of it looks different, but it's that every now and then we're like, oh shit, I recognize that building. That was there 50 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, LA's got some good old, you know, old in terms of what would be considered West Coast old.
Sure.
20s, 30s. I love all that old Hollywood history. And mm-hmm. if you need to know where the strip clubs are, just listen to Girls, Girls, Girls by Motley Crue. They list all of them. It's nice to have an idea what was there before and see what I make the joke about buying houses with old bones, but I like my neighborhood is all 100-year-old houses. And
mm-hmm.
as I'm in the basement of mine, no, like it's fucking weird, but it's structurally sound. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. I don't know.
Any recent renovations, repairs, projects?
That deck is finally done.
Yeah.
Second round lawsuit with the first guy.
Yeah, you're telling me about that.
But I'm out there. Yesterday I got home late Saturday night. Did a 14-hour drive. Only hallucinated for the last hour or so.
What time did you leave? You left Saturday night?
No, I left Saturday morning.
Okay.
A little before 10, and I got home about, I think, about 1:30.
Wow. That is a haul, man.
Yeah, I was feeling it. And then it's that last hour where you're not tired, but you've been driving, you start seeing shapes. A lot of stuff started looking like cars with no lights on the highway.
You remember the mileage-wise, your longest consecutive shot without a.
Oh, that's it.
I mean, I'm not talking about a power nap, but I'm talking about without getting a hotel and staying somewhere.
No, that was.
That was it?
I mean, I almost exclusively just pull over and nap if I got to just get somewhere. Mm-hmm. But so LA to Portland, Denver to LA, I think is 12.
I think it's 14.
Is it? That's about the most. So LA to Portland or Portland. It's always going back too. On the way down, it's always broken up or I'm not. When it's time to get home, I'm like, I got to get to these boys. I got to get to my boys. Speaking of which.
My house to Portland, 958 miles. Good job, buddy.
Okay, yeah. We handled that. But so, so I'm trying to pet-proof the deck. Like, all right, deck's in. I get screen materials. I'm zip-tied. It's got, like, cable railings. I got a pet gate and everything. Like, Wile E. Coyote and a Roadrunner. I get it all sealed up. All right, boys, you guys party on this top deck. You're locked in. I'm down in the garage doing something. If fucking peepee just rolling through, like, what's popping? God damn it, man. Like, it's a it's like classic. Like, we got, like, Wile E. Coyote's, like, setting up the trap, and the Roadrunner's behind him watching. And he's not dumb enough, or he is dumb enough, that he doesn't run. He just gets out, and he's like, ah, check out what I did. And I grab him, put him back in there. And so I got some other, I'm trying another method. I got some privacy screens that I can lean up against the railing. Those are coming. We'll see how he gets through those. But, okay, so this is a, sorry, I'm talking a lot, but this is a funny story. I'm outside.
Lay it on me.
So Peeps is in the garage. Fortunately, because it's coyotes. That's why I was letting them out last summer. Neighbors were like, we've seen coyotes in your yard. We know you have those cats. I'm like, yeah, okay, we can't be doing this anymore. Mm-mm. So I walk him on the leash, or like Peeps doesn't. Elwood, if he's outside, he's not coming in until he, you know, eats a small child. Like, that's his life. Mm-hmm. He's a predator. But Peeps just hangs out. So I'll walk outside with him so he can go. He's got to have his little grass snacks. And so he's in a garage, and my neighbor is walking by, and she's got one of her kids, and I think there was like a little play date. Two little kids were with her, and they saw the cat and stopped. I'm like, oh, go, you know, bring the cat over so they could pet the cat, because Peeps is very chill like that. And she's talking to me, and she, well, I don't light up. I'm thinking of like pseudonyms. She's like, oh, yeah, I saw coyotes at one point. You know, I was out here in the morning because I'd, you know, Tom and Jim come out and do their morning business in the yard. And I knew she had one dog named Tom. I was like, oh, you've got two dogs? She goes, no, the other one's just my son. Her dog and her kid both go and pee in the yard in the morning. And I was like, right on. she goes, yeah,
that's awesome.
Becoming a problem because now he'll do it at school and I got a call. I'm like, yeah, maybe you got to set up some parameters. I'm like, hey, you know what? What I do off the deck in the back of my house, I'm not telling anybody. So let them do what they got to do. But she was very.
One of life's greatest simple pleasures.
Exactly. She's how nonchalant. She's like, oh, yeah, Tom and Jim, they go do their business in the morning. Like, oh, you got two dogs? Nah, one of them's my kid. But like, yeah, I like my neighborhood, man. I like my neighbors.
That's funny, man.
Yeah.
When I had a house years ago, I had a fairly private backyard. I peed off the porch more than I peed in the bathroom.
Well, you're a self-confessed sink pisser.
Yeah.
You still doing that?
I'll pee in a sink. No, not in my own home, but, you know.
Okay, I don't know.
In an emergency, you know, I'll pee in someone's sink. What do I care?
Yeah, I've done it. But, yeah, off the deck.
I was gonna talk about how every now and then I'll pee in a bottle if I have to, and then dispose of it.
When do you have to?
I've done it here where like Katie's in the bathroom too long. It's like, man, I gotta piss, so I'll go fish out a nice bottle in the recycling, and now it's trash.
Well, why not just pee in a sink then? I'd rather pee in my own sink than though I got a piss bottle in my garbage. Also, man, it's a real Jesus in the tortilla kind of thing. Once you start seeing piss bottles on the side of the road, mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen like, oh, it's usually a water bottle size thing. But then you see the ones like, oh, you've been using that for a minute. That's a windshield wiper fluid jug.
Yeah.
That you just pour it out when you stop. Why are you collecting?
Yeah. Well, because a good piss jug's hard to find. Like, for example, you need one with a screw top, and you need one that can, I don't know, for lack of a better phrase, you know, hold your girth. You know, I used to have a bit about it. Like, you need the wide mouth bottle. That way you can insert. That way you don't have to worry about it getting anywhere.
You're fucking the bottle. You're not just kissing it?
Yeah, yeah.
You're just not kissing it with your hole?
No, I penetrate. And I put
my little dick lips on it.
Yeah, but no, that's too risky. That's too risky.
Well, you're doing it while you're driving is what you're saying.
Like, no, not while I'm driving. Lord, no. No, when I was in the van, I would always have a good pitcher. And the good ones are like the orange juice, the Tropicana or the Simply, because they got the wide mouth and the screw top. You don't need, like, for example, you get like a gallon jug, like a water jug. You can't have that little flip top bullshit. You need something that will screw and tighten. That way, You know, if it knocks over, you're safe.
What about a water bottle with like the sport top so you could spray your piss at people? like a skunk.
Yeah. Never thought of that. But,
I had the leftover, the one from the hospital. I took, when I was in the hospital for the appendectomy.
My lappy.
When you see what they charge you, I took all that shit home. How much for socks?
Good
Give
for
me
you.
Them fucking socks. How much for
that
piss
insane.
Jug? Give me that piss jug. I use that in the
How
van all
no
the time.
How is there no regulations on that, by the way? You hear all those stories. Like, oh, they charged me $85 for an aspirin. I mean, where's the regulations on that?
They're for-profit healthcare, man. Just another reason we're in the best country in the world, dude.
Yeah,
oh,
that's true.
Blake, I reposted it. Blake Hammond. He's from, I think, Cincinnati. He's an Ohio dude. Real, real funny. He's got a joke about how there's a judge that opted is vying to not have the death penalty for Luigi Mangione.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to butcher it. He's like, it's the first time a healthcare CEO has been linked to saving a life or to someone not dying.
Yeah.
I think was the phrase. It's like, well, he's got a lot of those. He's a good one. Blake Hammond.
Right on.
But anyway, as we recapped in the past two episodes that have been squashed by ghosts, what if we start talking about it again and then the machinery goes haywire? Maybe it's a subject matter.
I don't know, man. Maybe.
The meal was phenomenal. You made me a phenomenal
Thank you,
meal.
Buddy. Yeah. I know this is the third time you're talking about it.
I'll speed run it for everybody. Uh-huh. Olive tapenade. You said three kinds of olives, different types of garlic, feta cheese. I love a tapenade. I love olive spread.
Sun-dried tomato.
Sun-dried tomato, yeah. I love that. I bet you I could do muffuletta sandwich. You don't even do meat. Give me the provolone. Give me the tapenade.
Mm-hmm.
On a good bread.
Yeah, I got some good bread to dip it into. Also some crackers. Put it on a cracker. That's a good time. Uh-huh. But yeah, I can't get enough like of those bold olive and garlic and sun-dried tomato flavors. Just, ooh. I could eat a bowl of that like ice cream.
What was I using? Sliced green olive, pimento green olives for. I was putting them on something in place of.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Now I don't even remember. I think I was using it in place of like jardiniere. On
yeah,
I was making some fake meatball sandwich or something. And then
I'll tell you,
yeah,
topping out on a hot dog. Instead of relish?
Tapenade dog.
Oh, yeah, tapenade dog.
Spanish dog, el perro. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, the olive tapenade, what else? I did a little viral recipe of the, I guess for lack of a better word, Parmesan onion crisp. I don't know if you've seen this recipe floating around the internet, but quickly, just get a cookie sheet or a sheet pan, lay down a piece of parchment paper, and then treat it, kind of space them out kind of like cookies, about the size of a cookie too, but a little pinch of shredded Parmesan cheese, and then season that with a little garlic powder and smoked paprika, mm-hmm. and then some thin sliced raw onion rings, lay that on top, season that again, and then top it with more of that cheese. And an average cookie sheet, you get about 12, 15, 16 of them in there. Bake that shit for about 15 to 20 minutes at 400, pull it out, boom. You got literally just two ingredients other than the seasoning, just Parmesan cheese and onions. And kind of had like a fried onion ring vibe, even though it wasn't fried, but that melted crispy cheese kind of gives it a little bit of a breading vibe there.
It was great. And then
so that was
a big old pasta, plate of pasta.
Yeah,
homemade marinara, which was we'll quickly speed run the mystery of that there was meat in it, even though you made it and you said there wasn't. And I was like, I think Dave might be losing his fucking mind.
I did too. There was about 5 minutes where I thought I was going crazy.
I thought you were going crazy too. Turns out Dave put the rind of the Parmesan cheese in there, not by accident. Yeah. It's a thing you could do.
Yeah.
And as a, you know, primarily vegetarian, once we figured out what it was, I'm like, what a little hack, because it had like a chicken nugget consistency, but it was tasty
because
it was cheese, but it wasn't rindy because it'd been, how long was that sauce simmering for?
Oh, man. It was a two-day process just because, and I gave you my little dissertation about this, but I love just putting on a soup or a stew or a sauce or something and just letting it go all fucking day. It builds such deep flavor. But the problem with, you know, if your soup or stew or whatever has meat in it, you don't want to, even though stewed meat, there's only so much you can overcook it, but still you can overcook it even though it's stewed. So, you know, I can't do a gumbo or a soup, you know, for 15, 20 hours like I would like to, but with a marinara, when you're just talking tomatoes and roasted onions and stuff, I did it about 12 hours one day and about 8 hours the day that I served it to you. So it was about a 20-hour marinara. And, but yeah, I had never tried that hack. I just learned right prior to that about the cheese rind. You throw that in there, and it just adds some of that cheesy flavor. And I went to fish it out right before serving it, like I do with like a bay leaf or a knuckle bone or something in a stew. You got to fish all that kind of stuff out. I went to fish out the rind, and I spent about 5 minutes looking for it. I couldn't find it, and so I was like, oh, it just dissolved. It, like, melted and kind of dissolved, so no harm, no foul. And then when you started pulling out little chunks, at first it looked like little chunks of sausage, like sausage on a pizza or something, little nuggets. And I got one, and I was like, what the fuck is this? I, you know, specifically made marinara, not bolognese. And yeah, then you found like a fucking nugget. Yeah. So there was about 5 minutes where I just couldn't figure out what the fuck it was. And then it just hit me like, oh, that's the fucking rind. And it had kind of separated into little chunks. And you pulled out one that looked like, it looked just like a chicken nugget.
Yeah, it was a big old
piece. And that's when I thought
I
was going crazy. I was like, the ghost put chicken nuggets in my marinara. What the fuck's going on?
And to recap, we also investigated the missing spoon. I checked the drawer where the spoons were. No idea. Don't know what to tell you, everybody.
Yeah. Yep.
I got no answers for you.
Now they're taking the regular size spoons. I'm down to one regular size spoon. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. I got no answers other than the suggestions of one of you are sleepwalking and throwing them out.
Nah.
I think what it is you need to have a roll call at night and morning, prison style.
Inventory?
Yeah, inventory. You count them at night, you wake up, you count them in the morning.
Oh, man. I mean, I know it sounds fairly mundane, but I'm serious. And again, yes, I've checked everywhere. No, the cats don't take them. No, I got a garbage disposal, so they didn't fall down the sink without me knowing. And sure, there might be one or two under a couch somewhere that I haven't checked, but 36 missing spoons. So, I don't know. Yo no say.
Yeah, I can't offer an explanation.
Hey, pivoting real quick.
Yeah.
I just thought you might find this interesting. I don't know if you caught some of these headlines floating around the internet, but apparently Pizza Hut is bringing back the brick and mortar retro OG Pizza Hut stores.
Salad,
with the Pac-Man games,
salad bar,
the red cups, everything. Very exciting.
I would, now I know it's not going to be good. But as a kid, I remember, I think we covered this. We'd go to a sit-down Pizza Hut, and I would always want one of their sandwiches.
I don't remember Pizza Hut having sandwiches. I'm familiar with the Domino's baked sandwiches.
No. This was at the sit-down Pizza Hut. We're going way back.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, we're talking North Avenue. Let me get my suburban heads out there. North Park Mall. Yeah, North Park Mall. And then right down the way on North Avenue, you had a Pizza Hut, and then right next door... This is, you remember, sorry to go, because we go to Pizza Hut every few weeks, and I'd always want to.
Such a treat.
I would always want to get, they were like, it was, you know, an Italian kind of sub. I just remember being greasy as fuck, and I was about it. I was a child, like, yeah.
Was it cold or warm?
No, it was warm. They would heat it in the oven.
Melted cheese,
meat kind of crispy on the edges. My mom be like, "We're going to Pizza Hut. You're getting a sandwich." I'm like, "It's what I want to eat." So once in a while I could get one. Usually it's like, no, we're getting pizza because it feeds the family. You just don't get to have your own thing at Pizza Hut. I'm like, what the fuck? And so,
man.
But then we'd finish. My sister and I would finish early. We're going to go to the computer store. Do you remember when computers were, it was like the store of the future? If it was like a computer.
I remember like a Gateway store at the mall, I think. The Gateway, remember they had like the cow print
yes.
box.
Yeah. This was, I remember because they would just have the demos of the different graphics. And I remember being blown away. And I remember the first computer game with graphics was a miniature golf or pinball or something. But it was the idea that you could, you know, you use the mouse to pull back in a direction to point the, it must have been, I think it was mini golf. And you could play that as it was like on the demo in the store. But the graphics, it was up to that point, you only knew 8-bit graphics from, like, I'm talking like original Nintendo. So it was that same era
Or Atari.
Yeah, Atari. And then, but when people were going nuts about Zelda and Super Mario. So this is early
87.
Yeah. So kind of late grade school for me. But then these, they were so crisp, and it opened up. I was like, oh, it looks like a picture. And I'm going to see if I could find it early.
I was into Nintendo and Atari as a kid, but I never, well, maybe because I didn't own a computer, but I never played the actual computer video games. There was always a friend who had the, what you're talking about, where he's playing with the mouse, and he's got the little floppy disk, and he puts it in. But, like, we never had a personal computer ever. In my home till I moved out, so I missed out on all the actual computer games.
Oh yeah, we had a Commodore 64.
Yeah, I never had that.
3D Ultra Mini Golf. Maybe this is even still newer than what I remember. Are they saying it's early 2000s? So maybe it was.
Sorry, I remember when the iPhone came out.
Right now.
I remember I used to have to go into the AT&T store to pay my bill because it was always late. Mm-hmm. And like if I paid it via mail or whatever, it would always have me knocked out for a few days. So I would go pay it in person. And whatever that was, what, 06, 07, whenever the iPhone came out, I remember they had demos of that in the actual AT&T store. There was always a line. It was like people could not wrap their minds around it. It was like a phenomenon, at least in my town. Like people would stand in line just to spend 30 seconds on the demo of the iPhone.
That was 2006. I remember very specifically. Wade Randolph, if he's still out there. I mean, he's still out there. He was great. He's my buddy. But I remember sitting on San Fernando Boulevard having beers in front of something by the downtown Burbank area. And he had one. And we were just like, it was the beer drinking app. Remember, you'd tilt it, and it would look like the beer would go down?
Yes.
And I'm like, how does it know? How does it know I'm turning it? And I remember just not like, well, where are the buttons? Like, I sound like the, where are the buttons? No, you just touch the glass. And that was fucking 20 years ago, dude.
That's crazy.
Yeah. That's insane. Yeah. And it's been nothing but great ever since. It's been nothing but up and up. Nothing but great, wonderful advance. It really did seem like what I didn't have one for. I didn't have like a touch screen phone, I think, until 2011, maybe. Because I remember 2010. Then I think I had a BlackBerry.
Really?
Well, they were expensive.
Yeah, and they were short-lived because it feels like the BlackBerry,
iPhone came out. You know what's a fun, watch that, there's that movie BlackBerry, it's a comedy, but it's about how about how they imploded. And it is, it seems like, who gives a shit movie, but to watch how the tech race and how fast things move.
Sure.
And what people bet on being the...
We're living through that now with AI.
Man, I've got people that are like, it's inevitable, but they're not creatives. They're using it in like, I've got all these numbers that I need to get filled into a database. I use AI for it. There's tasks where like, it is making your thing easier. And all I see is like, you're just proving how little your job is human related.
Mm-hmm.
People I know, they're like, if I don't learn how to use it with my job, then I'm out. Like, it's the new skill to know how to manipulate it in. And I'm not talking creative jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But anything creative, I love if somebody's like, if you used AI for your flyer, I'm not going to your show. Like that,
100%,
absolutely.
YouTube video, I'll find a YouTube video I want to watch about some random topic, and 5 seconds in, I'm like, wait a minute.
I didn't know that. No, I was putting on stuff where it's like, here's a boring history of something. Oh, this is perfect for sleeping because it's interesting, but you're framing it in a way I'm like, these are all AI generated. This was maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah. You know, I will admit, there is one AI product that I do indulge in.
Sexbots.
I don't feel happy about it, but it is nice. I don't know what you would call it. I guess kind of a virtual reality, but there's a ton of them on YouTube now where it's just a beautiful setting. Like you're on the deck of a cabin next to a stream in a forest.
Mm-hmm.
And all the trees and the water and the bird, it's all obviously AI, but like I'll find myself like, I'm going to... The ones I come across in my algorithm because of all my jazz stuff. It's just like a Parisian coffee shop during a rainstorm, you know, and you're just sitting, it looks like you're sitting somewhere across the street from a little coffee shop. And it's just so idyllic and just beautiful. And I'm like, this is nice and peaceful, but yeah, I guess I am contributing to AI consumption.
Just get access to the closed circuit television that we're being surveilled by.
Yeah.
And watch that.
Yeah.
Don't give in to AI. Use the surveillance state that we're all.
I was thinking about that the other day. I mean, obviously, we're on the same side of the fence with the AI stuff. But if you think about it, couldn't a calculator be considered AI? That's artificial intelligence.
As we're talking about it, I have, my sleep app where, all right, here's rain sounds. Here's a thunderstorm. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting these things together, but it's not. I think it's AI is as
I is an oven artificial intelligence. I mean, where's the line between just modern convenience and actual artificial intelligence?
That's if I wasn't so overly caffeinated, I would like give me a minute. I want to ruminate. That's a great question. That's a really great question.
Because I thought about that the other day just with the calculator analogy, because it's like, I guess I've been using AI since grade school.
But then that's an abacus.
Mm-hmm.
That's an adding machine.
Sure.
That's it's taking what you're,
I don't know what 973 times 57 is, two seconds I could know with my calculator.
I would say artificial intelligence is... This is where people are saying, like, in certain workplace environments, in the medical field, where can aggregate that data and help you sift through just catalogs and catalogs of information for your thing. I don't know. That is a great question of what if I know it from the art and creative standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But it is there is that slippery slope argument of, what about art when somebody's drawing on an iPad and using that to, what about the commitment to actually taking pen or brush to a canvas in making it stick and committing to the art versus, oh, I can just erase my mistakes and start over.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think now that is the arguments that people would use in favor of AI. Now, when we're not talking about the energy consumption that it takes, I think that is a very legitimate reason to, your calculator is taking a battery. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to be a data center the size of Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Which, man, that Kevin O'Leary dude, how many bullet casing is, how many bullet casings is his name engraved on right now?
Yeah, exactly.
I think we were talking about that before.
Ingratiate yourself, dude.
There's almost respect is the wrong word, but we're like, yeah, I'm a villain. There's almost, I almost could be like, you know what, props. Nah. Like in a world of Marvel movies, you're like, yeah, I'm the fucking bad guy. Like, there's something to be said for owning it. There's something to be said for like, yeah, I'm a bad person. Wow, dude. All right. I mean, you got a lot of money. You should spend some of it because I don't think you got a lot of time left.
Yeah. Oh, that also sounds kind of like the president.
I mean,
he's leaning into that, right? He knows he's a fucking villain.
I think he's mentally not. I mean, I truly don't think he's got his faculties about him. And he's a useful. Everybody around him is going to get what they want because he.
And just a reminder, just not, you know, apropos of nothing, but if you're pro January, shut the fuck up about back in the blue. If you're pro January 6th, you know they're about to get they're going to win a lawsuit. I could pepper spray a cop and get $1 million. You heard about that new headline, right? The slush fund.
I'm not gonna do it. Yeah. Matt. I'm not gonna do it.
It's insane.
I already gotta go to the DMV. I already gotta interact with the government today, Dave. What are you trying to do, man?
Just remind you that we're governed by a bunch of moralist fucks. You already knew that.
Yeah.
You already know that. Oh, speaking of which, they say you can't fight City Hall, but I can, and I won.
Here we go. A success story.
Yeah, sticking it to the fucking man. I got a parking ticket right in front of my own apartment building. And I know that doesn't entitle me to anything.
But my point is,
I fucking live here. I'm not just swinging in to fuck my girlfriend. Like, living here in this neighborhood, no one has more incentive to follow the parking laws than the residents who live here and park here every fucking day. Long story short, I got a fucking parking ticket. And the violation was I parked within 20 feet of an intersection. Now, I didn't know that was a law, but there's two things, and I'm sure most big cities are the same, but as a motorist in Los Angeles, we are kind of subconsciously trained to follow two rules in regards to parking on the street. The first one is stay out of the fucking fire.
As a motorist in Los Angeles, I don't think you're compelled to follow any rules. I was just driving around there for a week.
No, when they're moving, yeah, no one. But like as far as parking, because they fucking hand out parking tickets like they're fucking samples at the food court in Los Angeles. They park a ticket for fucking everything. So the two things that you adhere to if you're a conscientious driver and parker in Los Angeles is stay out of the red fire lane and obey the signs, the street cleaning signs. I don't know if every city does this, but every street parking block in LA, there's a sign, hey, street cleaning Tuesdays, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. So don't park here 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. or else you're going to get a ticket at best and probably get towed. So everybody checks the fucking street cleaning sign and everybody stays out of the fucking red fire lane. All right. Beyond that, what else am I having to check? Right. Well, I park in the gray away out of a foot out of the red fire lane, but I apparently was 20 feet within 20 feet of the fucking intersection. So then after I get the ticket, I did pull out a tape measure and the fire lane, the little fire, the red curb is 18 feet long. And I parked a foot in beyond that, and I was still 19 feet from the fucking intersection. Thus, I got a ticket. Well, your boy requested a virtual hearing. It took about a month to get the fucking hearing. And I just told the guys, like, hey, I told him what I just told you. But I added, oh, am I also supposed to bring a tape measure everywhere I park? My point is, if the law is you can't park within 20 feet of the intersection, how about you make that red fucking fire lane 20 fucking feet, not 18 feet? Because idiots like me park in the gray and they go, oh, I'm out of the red and I'm obeying the street cleaning sign. What's the fucking problem? And when I said, am I supposed to bring a tape measure, the guy, I don't know if he was a judge or what, but he goes, oh, like he had this, like, he goes, oh, that's a great point. And I go, my question is, the person painting that thing, did they make a mistake, or is the city okay with 18-foot fire zones, hoping that we'll park outside of that and still be within? It's like, that's an unethical law to enforce. And the guy agreed with me, and they tossed it.
Well, yes. I think sometimes those meter maids and everything, yeah, don't park in front of a fire hydrant because they need it. Otherwise,
of course,
it's, they're just.
But do you see the paradox there? If I'm not supposed to park within 20 feet, then make the red zone 20 feet. Don't make it 18 feet. That's entrapment. That's so unethical.
Well, I think it's an oversight is what it was. But it's all just, they're going to give out tickets because people probably just pay them.
But could you imagine, when I was a cop, we call that cheese dick. That's a cheese dick ticket, meaning you should be embarrassed to write that fucking ticket.
I feel that way about most tickets.
You fucking hack. Really?
That a cop or was that a meter maid?
As a meter maid, yeah.
They're not cops. That's,
of course they're not cops, but they can write fucking tickets. But my question is, was that particular fire zone mispainted? Was it supposed to be 20 feet? Or are they all 18 feet, hoping you'll park a foot beyond it and still be within the 20-foot thing, and boom, here's a ticket. Like, that's some fucking horse shit.
Well, sounds like Dave's about to start walking around the neighborhood with a tape measure. You're about to be that dude. You're about to be that dude.
That's what
hood.
I asked the guy. Seriously. That's what I asked the guy. It's like, am I supposed to take a tape measure everywhere I fucking park?
This is Dave Investigates, a Boogie Monster Eyewitness News exclusive. And you go, I would encourage you, you got time, go measure all of them and see if they're bringing tickets out to everybody. And then this is a breaking news story in West Hollywood that everybody's like, wait a minute, I got that ticket too, and I just paid it because I figured whatever. But you're like, no, it's corruption, and you're taking them down. You're from the ground floor up. This goes all the way to the top. Watch your back, Dave. This could be the expose that leads to people. They're trying to make you nuts. They're trying to steal your spoons, make you not trust yourself because you're onto a story here, Dave.
Meanwhile, it is perfectly legal. I've complained about this before, but please, people, if you have to park on the street, please adhere to this. Meanwhile, use the whole gray space. What I mean is, there's little stretches right here where if everybody parks
where they should,
four cars can fit here, right? If everybody if you max out the space, the first car maxes out their space, and the last car maxes out their space. Four cars can park here, but then the guy in the back left 12 feet behind him,
which is
not enough for someone else to park.
You're living in the wrong city if you're looking for consideration for your fellow citizen, Dave.
You're goddamn right.
You're in the wrong
place. I can't even get a
buddy.
Thank you wave in Los Angeles when I let somebody in traffic.
We were talk about peeing on stuff. I would just say street justice. I'd pee on a lot of door handles when they do that with the parking.
Yeah.
Fucking note, man. I want them to know.
I got another thing.
But I'm going to fuck with you, though. Mm-hmm. This is the doubt. This is in the court where, like, how do you know it wasn't a motorcycle that was parked there that took up half a space and threw off the calibration for everybody else?
Sure, and that does happen, but most of the time it's some dickhead I'll park here, and like, dude,
a reasonable doubt. If there's a motorcycle and you didn't see it, you don't know if that guy parked like a dick, or if there was a motorcycle there before. I'm just saying this is what I have to tell myself, so I don't get bent out of shape about these things,
which only
happened when I live in Los Angeles. I made it from Portland all the way to fucking Sunset Boulevard in front of Del Taco before I had a road rage incident last week. Because somebody was parked in oncoming traffic to talk to somebody going in the direction of traffic. Both cars were parked on Sunset Boulevard. Now, I don't know if there's an altercation, they're yelling, but they both decided to stop on the street. I made it almost 1,000 miles without having a single road rage incident until I got to that moment. I'm like, get your heads out of your fucking asses. So
it's insane.
You're in the wrong set. This is where the city's not going to change, Dave. It's about deep breathing techniques. It's about finding your inner peace. But I think you should go measure these curbs around the neighborhood. It might be a scam. They might all be that, so they can write these tickets.
Yeah,
I would say go take a little walk. Take old Charles out undercover so you're not bringing heat on you. A little doo-doo-doo, tape measure on the ground. Okay, we'll see what's up.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. No, I have since got a bunch of these little cards that I just texted you. I've placed about 10 of those on cars so far, so those are fun. These little business cards, it look like a little warning or violation ticket or something, and it tells you exactly why you how and why you park like a fucking asshole. And I appreciate your devil's advocate motorcycle example there, but my point is I'm talking about the thousands upon thousands of cars that I have physically seen
Dave,
like a fucking dickhead.
Dave, these are cards that you bought that are litter now.
Well, that's okay. At least I got something.
No, you know what you do? You get a paper sticker, not vinyl, paper. A paper sticker on the window. And then get it wet.
Ah.
That's an inconvenience to somebody. This is going to make somebody proud that they irritated somebody else. You're not irritating them with this. This you live in L.A. People are happy that they're dickheads. Do you? You've lived there a long time. People are proud to be assholes.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that was the thing. I was making a joke there. I was like, man, I saw somebody pick up their dog shit. And I saw a white BMW use a turn signal. This town's changed, man.
Those damn white BMWs. If you know, you know.
I refer to that color as bitch white.
Oh, don't get me started on the dog shit. I've got a couple of cases, active cases where I'm hunting dog shit.
Not
perpetrators.
Yeah, haven't been back there. I'm like, oh, that's the part where you talk about things that I miss about L.A. Now, granted, I don't live downtown. Where is it, dog shit or human shit?
Yeah.
Is that from a big dog game or a sick person? You know, that I don't live in that neighborhood, but that being back there has made me appreciate a lot of things about Portland. Oh, we're all doing 10 under the speed limit. All right, you know what? That's irritating too, but I may as well just hit my I got one hitter in the car. Let's take a drag off that. And then I'm doing 10 under too. I'm doing the same
thing. The dog shit thing blows my fucking it used to it was the you're an asshole if you don't return your shopping cart, which you still are, but like this is so much worse. Hey fucko, nobody enjoys doing this,
Dave,
but we do it because as a society there's a contract,
Dave,
of hey, we can't all be walking around stepping in
Dave,
each other's fucking dog
you
shit
live in
pick
a,
up your fucking dog
you
shit.
Live in a city where everybody is the star of their own show. Where everybody is the
Let's
most.
Let's have a show about someone picking up
Dave,
dog shit.
Dave, you live in a city where everybody is the center of their own universe.
Ugh.
I know that too. I would have the same thing. Having not lived, like, yeah, dude, you're in the
How
wrong.
Can
if
you
these
not?
Are the things that upset you, you're in the wrong city. If you
am I
if you want
or is that just
no,
human
you're
garbage.
Not overreacting. But if you want consideration for your fellow human, leave L.A. You gotta leave L.A., dude. Because everything you're mad about now,
like that everywhere.
Everything you're mad about now is not going to get better.
But imagine being that person. Hey, my dog just shit in public. Now that's someone else's problem. Imagine, how does that person sleep at night?
How do you not get used to this when you've lived there for how many years? I don't like them either. I would have the same rage as you. Now I don't live there and I don't have that rage anymore. And I'm grateful for that. But yeah.
Everybody picks up their dog shit in Portland. That's cool.
No, I don't. Like I said, I'm not downtown or areas, but it's not nearly as bad.
Well, in my, you know, not
as LA. But again, LA, everybody moves to LA because they think they're the exception.
But here's the thing.
And I'm not excluding myself. I moved there too thinking like, I think I got a chance at doing something different with my life. No, I wouldn't not pick up dog shit or do that stuff with the parking because I was raised right.
My thing is though, and this isn't a humble brag, but I live in a pretty nice neighborhood. I've lived in neighborhoods where like, oh yeah, that tracks. Duh. This is, you know, that's why the rent's so cheap, Dave. Give and take. The rent's not cheap here. It's a pretty nice neighborhood.
Just because you got money doesn't mean you're a good person. Usually exactly. The opposite.
But you still think those people would at least care about appearances. Like, I would be filled with shame if someone saw me not pick up my dog shit.
I'd be
embarrassed.
You're missing the point, man. They're too good to pick up dog shit. They're stars.
Do you really think that's what it is?
Yes,
like, I don't do this.
No, they're exceptional.
Then don't have a dog,
asshole. Dave, they're more important than that. They're exceptional human beings. They're exceptional. This is somebody else's problem. All these are somebody else's problem.
Yeah.
And you're taking it on yourself to make it all your problem, which is...
Well, I'm the one who fucking stepped in it, so...
Yeah.
Not to make it about me, but when your dog's feces is on my shoe, then yeah, I'm going to make it about me.
Yeah, but I'm saying you're in the wrong town. If you think this is going to change, or you have to change how you deal with it. Mm-hmm. So, but I got to, speaking of getting angry, I got to go to the DMV. I have an
appointment.
I have license
renewal.
Yeah. I have an appointment though. So that's why I have to get going. Cause I'm not just going to go sit there with my thumb up my ass. Although I do my crossword puzzles on my phone. I'm good with downtime these days.
That's good.
Well, I hope you are you more mad or you feel better that you vented a little bit there? Because I know you're getting riled.
It doesn't matter.
I do think you should go measure all the paint and see if that's real. And then you can get on Nextdoor and make it an issue. Get the community involved.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to. Well, that is insane.
And that's what I'll add. It's, you know, in L.A., it's the sense of community. Where do you feel a sense of community? If you feel a sense of community, then you kind of take care of if it's your street and you know your neighbors, you kind of take care of that street because that is what community builds. In L.A., it's a lot of individuals with individual pursuits. So when you don't have a sense of community, you're not as likely to take care of stuff. It's like, you know, like usually you live in an apartment building and that's your community. Hey, you got a package in the hallway. I saw that and let you know that kind of thing. It's how wide does that feeling extend around you? Which is why I like to meet my neighbors. Hey, I'm Kyle. I live here. Oh, you live there. Hey, is that? Oh, I saw your dog got out. Let me, you know, I like that. I want to know that. With the people I live around.
The thing is, it's not complicated. I'm not some enlightened, evolved, high level thinking person. It's the golden fucking rule. We learned that as a child. It's pretty goddamn simple to adhere to it. The golden rule.
But my sentiment is that. If you walk a block over, you know, you're not going to let your dog shit on a sidewalk in front of your building because those are your neighbors. You walk a block over, your dog shits. You don't have a sense of community over there. L.A. does not have a sense of community in that way. And I will say, credit to New York. People don't seem to get as riled about that shit in New York, I think, because you're walking all the time and there's more of a, sidewalk's dirty. I think it's just that attitude, but. Whatever. I think it's a sense of community and pride in where you live. And you know, LA, you don't have that. Somebody lives in an apartment for a year, 2 years, they move. There's not like people don't build history around their neighborhoods as much.
Yeah, but look at where you used to live. When you lived over there near the Hollywood sign. That was a lovely neighborhood. There was a sense of community over there.
No, there wasn't.
No?
No, there wasn't.
You would think that people would be proud to live over
there. I had the recycling bin where a neighbor wouldn't break down boxes. We got everybody's using a shared recycling bin. Throw a whole box in there. Not even break it down. So I put a little sign up on the trash. Mm-hmm. Please break down your recycling. Whole box shows up there. This dumb bitch left her name and address on the box. Mm-hmm. So I just cut that label off and stuck it to my sign. Now this bitch would go and take her name and name off the boxes, still not break them down, but go out of the way to put the label off. I hope she's dead. Truly, whatever. You're that kind of shitty person. You're unnecessary. You're unnecessary to the world. If that's how shitty you are about stuff. I left a nice note like, hey, just please remember to break down boxes. Still, nah. That's L.A.
You know what's worse than not breaking down your boxes? Not breaking down your boxes and putting them in a receptacle that's not your building's receptacle. The neighboring building did that, and I brought it back to his apartment. I knocked on the door and waited for him to open, but he didn't. But yeah, not only did he not break it down, he put it in our thing. They got their own thing, so guess what? That's going right back on your fucking stoop, asshole.
Yeah, and that's where like, okay, so now I know who you are, and I know that you suck. But buddy, I gotta go. We could talk another 3 hours about the selfishness of the people of Los Angeles.
Oh God, you got 60 more seconds in you.
What's up?
Hanger steak recipe. Eat more hanger steak. I had the best steak I've ever had the other night. Go get a hanger steak, meat eaters. It's honestly better than a ribeye or New York strip if you get a good one. Hanger steak. Here's the marinade. Real simple. Get you some garlic paste. Little tube that's in the produce section. Get you a little tube of basil paste. Garlic paste, basil paste, probably about 2 tablespoons each in a bowl. A couple shakes of soy sauce, a squirt of brown mustard, and a squirt of olive oil. Mix all that shit up. Throw it in a Ziploc bag. Throw your hanger steaks in there. Shake it all about. Put it in the fridge for 6 to 12 hours. Boom. Reverse sear in the oven. 250 degrees for about 25, 30 minutes. Pull it out, turn that shit to broil while it rests. It's going to take about 15 minutes to get that broiler heated up. Throw it back in for 5 minutes under the broiler. Boom, medium rare, garlic basil marinated hanger steak. One of the best fucking steaks I've ever had in my life. Check it out.
How about it? How about it?
Good times. How about it? All right, I'll calm down. I'm going to go fucking measure these curbs.
I think that's that's Dave Stone investigative reporting. What's up?
But yeah, I beat City Hall. They say you can't fight City Hall. Fuck that.
Take it all the way. I think it goes all the way to the top, and you're the guy to find out about it.
He even got the guy to agree with me. Not only did they toss it, he agreed with me. So little victories, Kyle.
I know it, man. All right, go get him.
All right, buddy. Have fun at the DMV.
I always do.
Pick me up something. Pick me up a donor card or something.
What do you want, a T-shirt?
All right, buddy.
See ya.
Okay, thank you.